Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine, the MD, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place.
Hello, welcome to podcast number 82. You're listening to the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. I hope everyone is staying warm out there. In Kansas, where I'm at, there is an Arctic blast that has me about ready to take a tent and move south and live on a beach. I don't enjoy this cold weather, and so I'm just trying to get through the cold part. I just had the discussion with my husband that it's only like two or three more weeks until March, where hopefully we start to see some lightening of the coldness. So this week, the podcast is going to be on the gray zone. I love the concept of the gray zone. I think it's one of the most powerful concepts I teach people when they're feeling stuck and they feel like they just can't get started. So we're going to talk about that. Before we get started, I want to tell you guys how I've been growing a garden in my basement, my basement garden. Cold weather be damned, I will grow fresh foods. So I don't know about you guys, but I certainly have struggled in the past. I don't struggle with this so much anymore, but definitely I purchase like fresh vegetables and then some portion of them end up going bad in the fridge and we have to throw them away. This still happens to me sometimes, even though I eat easily my four servings of veggies every day. It really bothers me to have purchased and spent money on fresh veggies only to have them go bad. I have this story about wasting money. So I thought, you know, how much fun would it be to grow my own veggies? What would that look like? What would that be? I'm currently growing broccoli and tomatoes, cucumbers, carrots, and strawberries in my basement. I have a bunch of grow lights set up. I'm sure my neighbors think I'm nuts, but I'll tell you, I've learned a ton of really fun things. It's an exercise in patience, which anybody who knows me knows that that's not something that has come to me. Patience is not something that came to me naturally. That's something I've had to work on. And definitely growing plants in my basement in the winter is an exercise in patience. It's an exercise in consistency. I have to check on these plants every day. I have to make sure their lighting is right, their water is right, all of it. It's been kind of impressive. I've proven to myself, I can be consistent in a lot of things. The other fun part of this, it's been a really good time, is my kids really love the growing and the planting with me. They are really excited to plant seeds. They are really excited to see them start to sprout up when they start to grow, and then excited to see the growth that occurs, and then the excitement they have and the anticipation of the food that they are going to have made with their own bare hands and eating that. So they really have been having fun with this. And bonus for mom, I get to hang out with my kids more, which is just yay me. I'm loving it. So check out my pics on Instagram. There's some pictures up there of my basement garden. It's easier than I thought it would be, so definitely if you find that you're sick of wasting carrots or broccoli or whatever it is, pick one plant and see if you can make them grow. Try it out, see how it goes. I know that in the past I have grown tomatoes and I found that they were more like growing a weed than they were like growing a plant. Once you get them going, they're kind of hard to stop. So if you're wanting to do something like that, wanting to have your own veggies, wanting to have something that you can pick from the vine, try some tomatoes. I think they're pretty easy to grow, or they have been for me in the past. Try it out. Let me know how it goes. So a quick plug for next week's podcast. We are going to be talking about the why, the question why. This is a question that I frequently will ask my clients. I'll talk to them about, how did you do with eating this week? How did you do with monitoring your blood sugars? How did you do with checking your weight? And a lot of times when people are first getting started, they come to me and they're like, well, I didn't do it. And I'll ask why. And I think that this question actually breeds a lot of almost defensiveness is probably the word. in my clients, they get really defensive immediately. And then they want to tell me the obstacles, like the actions, like I got stuck at work, or I forgot, or whatever else might have been going on in that moment that kept them from doing this measurement to see if they're reaching their goals. And so next week, I'm going to be talking about what I actually mean from the why, what I actually am trying to get out with my clients when I ask them why. It's really imperative. If you've eaten to the point, if you eat food to the point that you're sick, physically sick with type 2 diabetes, then you likely have managed your emotions with food. So learning to how to stop doing that so that you're not sick anymore is really, really important. So that's what we will be talking about next week. And definitely hit subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of the podcasts. Okay, let's dig into the gray zone. Again, this is really one of my favorite concepts to teach clients, and especially my new clients, because a lot of times they find that they get stuck because they can't possibly examine what's going on in the gray zone. So everyone wants to believe it's either black or white. It's either perfect or imperfect. It's all or nothing. It's McDonald's three times a day, or it's broccoli and chicken only. This mindset is what keeps us held back from reaching our goals. It's what keeps us stuck, sick with type 2 diabetes, with extra weight on our body. So I tell my clients all the time, it's not about 100%. And I tell them this, and I want everybody else to hear this, not just my clients. But most of my clients actually reach their health goals and their weight goals performing at somewhere between 60 and 80%. So it's not 100%. It's not 100% perfection. It's 60 to 80% of perfection. That's usually what gets people to the goals. So they do it perfect 6 out of 10 times, or between 6 out of 10 times and 8 out of 10 times. And they get healthy doing it that way. So what if that were possible? So many of us think that we have to be 100%. And that keeps us stuck to a point that we don't even try. And this is what I want to talk about today. So I'm going to give you a couple examples of actual clients. And then I'm going to give you some non-food, non-health examples of where this shows up. And then I want to talk about what the gray zone is. So one of my clients came to me and had started doing the Whole 30. The reason that she wanted to do the Whole 30 was because she had done it in the past and really liked the way she felt. And she was doing a bit of a modified version of the Whole 30. So she wasn't doing it, you know, exactly perfect in her head. She started out with that story. But then one day she broke her plan by having 2 alcoholic drinks with her husband. And that wasn't on her plan. And so she immediately jumped to it was all broken and that she wasn't going to be able to do the Whole 30. Like, I'm not going to be able to stick to it because clearly I've already broken the Whole 30. For her, that created a lot of disappointment, a lot of confusion, and almost a feeling of loss for herself. And it was from this belief, if I can't be perfect 100% of the time, I just can't do it at all. I've had other clients come to me and they are hell-bent on doing keto. Like, I have to do keto. It's the only way I get results is when I do keto. I have to do really, really strict keto. And they can't even get started because if they can't perform the strict keto, then they feel like they're not going to get any results. Really, it's black or white, right? Like, either it's black and not doing it at all, or it's perfect and pristine and white and doing 100% perfect strict keto. And what this, of course, creates is because what they've done is a lot of times they think that they need to do this strict plan because they did it before and they got results. They don't see the folly in that mindset and that you weren't able to keep it up. If you were able to keep those results up, we wouldn't be talking today about how to lose weight or how to get your blood sugars normal, how to get your health back. So this idea that it needs to be strict and that's the only way I can get results, in your mind, if that's what you're believing, in your mind, you understand that this is a faulty thought process because you struggled to keep it up in the first place. Okay. So again, that's black or white thinking. That's all or none thinking. That's 100% or 0%. And then the client that came to me wanting to do keto, in their case, they came to me and were like, I just need to do strict keto. I just need to do strict keto. I just need to do strict keto. They would do strict keto for 2 or 3 or 4 days, and then they would find a reason that they didn't like strict keto, and they'd stop doing strict keto, and they just stayed stuck in this circle because they had this belief, and they couldn't see that that belief that they had to do strict keto was what was keeping them stuck. Then I had another client who came to me and had told me, I don't know how to do it. I've done calorie counting before and gotten results. I've done keto before when I've gotten results, but I just don't know. I don't know which one I should do. And they stay in this loop of confusion because they believe it has to be one way or another. And again, if it was just straight calorie counting that worked for them, we wouldn't be talking about this. You'd already have reached all your goals. You'd be non-diabetic and you'd be have your weight where you want it. But the fact is, there was something about strict calorie restrictions that you did not like, or there was something about strict keto that you did not like, or you'd still be eating that way. All of this comes from a belief that there is a right way, a single right way. Clients come to me and they're like, tell me the combination to unlock the puzzle so that I can solve it, have my health, my vitality, my weight where I want it, and everything will be grand. I will perform the combination, unlock the puzzle, fix everything, lose the weight, and all will be well. So the problem with this mentality is you are making your blood sugar readings or the scale reading mean that all is well. And that is not what makes all be well, okay? You are very unlikely to find one combination that will work for you forever. And this goes down to physiology. What your body needs at age 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 will likely change over those decades. So finding a combination that quote unquote works is going to be difficult to make it work forever. The other problem with this mentality is there is in this thought process, there is a desperate feeling. There is a lack of belief in your own knowledge. All of that sets yourself up for failure. It sets you up to not know that you can get the job done. And in turn, you're going to produce evidence that you can't get the job done. So is it possible that the solution that I give you to the puzzle, the combination that you need to perform to solve the puzzle, is something that you're not going to like? You fix your diabetes, you lose weight, but you hate the way you're eating. Do you believe that that is possible if I were to give you the solution, quote unquote? Continuing to do something for the rest of your life, like eating strict keto that you don't love, is really hard. Nobody sticks with that. Nobody wants to live their life that way. So they stop doing it. Their blood sugars go back up. And they gain all their weight back. But recognize that in stopping doing it, it's not like, oh, suddenly I'm adding more carrots and carby veggies and fruits. They're like, oh, I can't maintain this one way that works forever. And so they throw in the towel and suddenly they're eating McDonald's 3 times a day, right? They're back at doing that. So if I can't figure out a way to do this, then I can't reverse my diabetes is basically what they mean. They say in their head, this is what the client says in their head. If I can't figure out a way to do strict keto, then I can't reverse my diabetes. If I can't figure out a way to follow the Whole 30 perfectly, then I can't reverse my diabetes. If I can't figure out the one combination that fix it for me, then I can't reverse my diabetes. This is related to a perfectionist mindset, which we're going to dig into a little bit. All of these thoughts and mindsets really hold us back and keep us stuck. For a moment, think of the feelings that come up with this, right? If I can't be perfect 100% of the Whole 30, then I'm failing. We feel defeated when we say those kinds of things. I need to be strict keto in order to lose weight. We feel stuck, manipulated, coerced. And then, of course, from that feeling, we avoid taking the leap, right? I don't want to feel stuck forever. I don't want to feel manipulated by my beliefs. We rebel and we eat all the junk. And we prove to ourselves that by only being strict keto will I get results, right? That's the result that we give ourselves when we act from those feelings, when we act from that belief. When we have the thought that I'm not sure how to do it, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've gotten results, and we feel confused, try it out, see how you feel, we feel confused. Our actions from that confused state are very graspy. We try this thing for a day, we try that thing for a day. They're different, but we tried something. On day 3, we're frustrated and we eat McDonald's morning, noon, and night. And of course, then you don't get any information about how you make it work for you. Recognizing that that's what you're creating for yourself. You're creating evidence of that belief that you just don't know. You're creating evidence of the belief that you can only do it by strict keto. All of this is, again, partly due to perfectionist mindsets, the need to have nothing less than perfection. Initially, perfectionism sounds like a good thing. You hold yourself to high standards. But is getting quick results perfection? Are blood sugars under 100 the only version of perfection? Is that 30-pound weight loss per month the only kind of perfection? Who gets to decide what perfection is anyway? That's one thing you really need to think of. Who gets to decide how your journey to health is perfect? You always get to decide how it's perfect. And I'll tell you, something that you can do and stick with forever, that's far more perfect than any strict keto, calorie counting, or Whole30 will ever be. So some non-health examples that I run through this with many of my clients. When I was a resident, when any of us physicians are training for our career, it's about a decade that we go through training. Some are a little longer, some are maybe a little shorter. But part of my job as a resident was to dictate what we called discharge summaries. These were summaries of inpatient patients that had been admitted to the hospital that gave a summary of everything that happened, all the pertinent things that happened during their hospitalization. Our attending, so our bosses, reviewed these discharge summaries, and I never wanted my work to disappoint them. And I also knew that if I did a good enough job, they'd just be able to sign the document, not make any corrections, and it would make their lives easier. So it was like really important that I did a really good job. In addition to making sure that discharge summary was immaculate and perfect in every way, these documents would also go to the patient's primary care physician out in the community. And if I did a super good job, those docs in town would see the perfect job I did. They would have proof of how amazing I was, and that would build an outstanding reputation for myself, right? So in my brain, there was a lot riding on these discharge summaries being perfect. The most basic of discharge summaries are 2 to 3 pages in length. Essentially, they tell the story of the patient's stay in the hospital. That's the point of the discharge summary. That's what they need to have in that document. But you can make these pretty lengthy. You can include every x-ray. So a patient that was admitted for 3 weeks for a severe pneumonia might have, in 21 days, might have 10 different x-rays, 10 different chest x-rays. You could include every one of those. You could include that patient may have also had, in addition to 10 different chest x-rays, may have also had a CT of their chest to look at their lungs. You can include that. If the patient started acting strange due to either not getting enough oxygen, they started, like, their mental status started to be altered, or some of the medications that we give can alter mental status, they may have had an MRI ran in their brain, and you want to report that out. And not only are you reporting a normal or an abnormal chest x-ray, but you're reporting a normal or an abnormal lung CT or chest CT and any findings that they might find. Oh, they also found a nodule. That's going to need to be followed up X, Y, and Z. And then you're reporting the brain MRI. Oh, we did a brain MRI. That saw X, Y, and Z. Not just that there wasn't a stroke on it or there was a stroke on it, right? And then if there was any ultrasounds, any of the lab, the blood work that was done, and that's another thing, that blood work gets done almost every day. Do I report out every single day's CBC count, every single day's sodium reading? Do I report out every single one of those laboratory findings? You could. Like, that would be a very, very thorough discharge summary, right? In addition to the laboratory studies that were done, you can look at any specialty studies done. Did they do an EKG? Did they do an echocardiogram? What else did they do? What medications were they on? You could report all that out. If they were in the ICU, how long were they in the ICU? When did they move out of the ICU? How did we know they were well enough to move out of the ICU? Were there any other procedures performed? Were there any other specialists on the case? What did the specialists say? What did they do? Any specialty studies? How did the patients do each day? Sometimes people would report out each day how the patient was doing. We could report all of these different things. We could report, like, interaction with family members. We could report out on this, what led to the patient being discharged? What medications were prescribed from us at discharge? Which ones were new? Which ones were home medications? Which of their home medications were not restarted on discharge? Were they sent home with lab studies that still weren't resulted out that the primary care doctor would need to follow up on? When should they see the specialist? When should they see the primary care doctor? This document clearly could get very extensive very, very quick, especially in patients who are admitted for many, many weeks, right? So these documents could take a lot of time and effort to put together and then dictate for the patient's chart. So because I believed early on in my residency, I believed that my reputation was totally tied to these documents and I wanted them to be perfect. And because they needed to be perfect, they would take tons of time and resources out of my life. I knew I needed to have a lot of uninterrupted time. And because I was a busy resident in training, it turns out I didn't have a lot of uninterrupted time. Early on in my residency, what happened is I had like 30 discharge summaries that had stacked up that I needed to do. Okay. So I took an entire weekend once and like dictated out all these discharge summaries. Okay. I should have been at home relaxing and resting so that I could be a really great resident the next week. And I couldn't do that because I had to catch up on these documents because I was so debilitated by this idea of being perfect in that document that I couldn't even get the job done. When these documents stacked up like this, I want you to see what actually happened. What I dictated out was not, in fact, perfect. Many of them were weeks and even months old, which meant that my memory of that patient's hospitalization was faded. When my attendings would see these come through for their signature, they would know that these were months old and that I had not gotten the job done in a timely fashion. When the community physicians would see those documents come across their desk, they would also know that they were months old and I'd not done the work in a timely fashion. So was it perfect work? Heck no! No, it was not perfect work. I don't care how perfect even the document was. If I had included every laboratory finding, every x-ray finding, every specialist, every piece of information that happened during that hospitalization, it was imperfect and far from perfect because it was not provided to the other physicians in a timely fashion. Okay? So the idea of wanting to be perfect in that situation really debilitated me. It really cut me at the knees and limited the perfection that I could provide no matter how, quote unquote, perfect the document was. So I love using this non-food example, but when we apply this to the things that we eat, to the food that we eat, that the things that we do to our health, to the things that we do with our health, we have thoughts that if I can't do a perfect Whole30, then I'm not going to do it. If I can't do strict keto, then I'm not doing anything. If I can't figure out whether it's calorie counting or keto that's perfect for me, I can't even get started. This kind of perfectionism keeps us stuck. So how do I remedy this with my client? How do I remedy this with my clients? It is the concept of the gray zone. I love the concept of the gray zone. There is a gray zone between every imperfection and perfectionism. There is a gray zone between eating McDonald's 3 times a day and doing the perfect Whole30. There is a gray zone between eating pizza every night and doing keto. There is a gray zone between eating wings and fries every night and eating 900 calories a day. There is a gray zone between the perfect diet and downing a bag of Oreos while you're Netflixing and totally checking out because you can't figure it out. What if we explore the gray zones? What if we didn't have to be perfection all the time? What if the way I did it didn't have to be the perfect part, but maybe it just had to be different than McDonald's 3 times a day, or the pizza every night, or the wings and the fries, the bag of Oreos on the couch? What results would you start to see if instead of dropping from McDonald's 3 times a day to 20 carbs per day, you just stopped having the McDonald's? Maybe instead you went and had homemade meals every night. Do you think you would be seeing improvement in your health just with that one change? Would you see changes in your health if instead of eating pizza every night, you changed it to a salad with a portion of spaghetti? You wanted the Italian flair, so you wanted spaghetti. Would you see improvement in your blood sugars, in your weight, in your health if that was what you did? What if instead of vegging with a bag of Oreos, you opted for a bowl of grapes? You don't have to do anything else differently. Do you think you would see some changes if that's what you did? Do you think that your results would be different? If you don't think so, definitely dig into the why not, which again, we're going to get into that next week, the whys, right? See if you can find some room to at least try it out. But if you have a belief that there is nothing that will ever make you healthy, that's where coaching comes in. That's what we coach on. Lots of my clients come to me and they're like, oh, nothing I'm ever going to do is going to make a difference. That's totally fine. We try to find a crack in that belief. And then we try to expand it a little bit until you believe that I am in control of my health and I can fix this. That's the power of coaching. And it's powerful because it applies not just to your health and your diabetes and your weight, but it also applies to your relationships with your spouse, your relationships with your kids, your relationships at work, your career, how you want to launch your career or do something different or have really meaningful impact in your career, all of that stuff. That is the beginning of it. So that's why this work I find so very rewarding and empowering and meaningful. That's what we do with coaching. If that's what you need to do to up-level your health and really your life, send me a message, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. See if my program is right for you. Find out if that's something you want to do. All right. I hope you have a great week. Stay warm out there, and I will talk with you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.